Welcome to Authors of the Pacific Northwest, where we connect Pacific Northwest authors with new listeners and provide advice for aspiring authors on the business of writing. I'm your host, Vicki J. Carter. So hi there, listeners. It's Vicki again, and we have the amazing David R. Jones, who is an author that I've met through another author, and he'll probably tell us a little bit about that connection. So first, David, why don't you say hi to our listeners and tell us what state you're in.
Hello, my name's David Jones, and live in Longview, Washington, and my wife is CJ Jones, who is also an author who you've probably heard her podcast by now.
Yeah, we did. That's how we got connected. And I thought it was so fantastic that a husband and wife team are working on their own particular genres. So I was very excited to get you on too. Yeah. So let me ask you this question. Do you have a day job? And if so, what it is, share with us. And yeah, we'll go from there.
Okay. All right. Actually, right now, I'm a full-time student at LCC. Hey. I'm trying to finish up my business management degree.
Okay, cool.
Because I've done the physical labor aspect because I'm a big guy. I'm 6 foot two, 380 pounds. So, it's time for me to use my mind a little bit.
Yeah, exactly.
I do that full time, going to school, and I write.
Awesome. What a great gig, I tell you. And you're right in my neck of the woods. I don't know if you heard from CJ. That's where I got started at.
Yeah.
I was at LCC, and kind of that's how I got connected with her. So you're right in my neck of the woods.
Awesome.
So, David, tell us and the listeners and me, when did you know you were an author?
When I first discovered that I could write was probably about 22 years ago. It was about 21 years ago. It was after my son was born, and I wrote a poem, and I got it published in a collection of poems for just beginning authors and things like that. And I'm like, oh, I like this. I can write. I started coming up with an idea, and I had worked on one story that I never finished. I've got it in my collection of stuff to finish. and then I started writing other stories. And when I had my first break was around 2012 when I self-published my first book. And since then, it's like, I'm an author. And a lot of my stuff is started picking up, and it's real popular overseas. And
that's good.
I'm kind of like an internationally published author now.
Oh, that's very cool.
Yeah.
So tell the listeners and myself, but mostly for your listeners, what have you published? What's the books? What's the genre?
Right now, I've got four active published books. Before this one that I just finished, I had six, but I retired three of them because they are going into this reimagining of the books of Chauvel.
Oh, okay.
That's my new set, and there's three books, or no, actually, I'm sorry. There's the first book, I've got book one, and I'm working on book two, which should be finished within the next couple of months and be released.
Oh, great.
I also got The Z Word, which is a zombie book. And it's a little bit more adult oriented. It's not a romance, but there's a lot of eroticism to this book. And it's nothing like, people having sex with zombies. No, there's a story between some characters, and then there's zombies also.
Gotcha. I love zombies.
Oh, this is a good one. I've also got My Dark Gift, which is a short story about a vampire. And then I have a collection of short stories that my brother helped me with a little bit called Reflecting Pool.
Oh, very cool.
And it's just kind of short stories. It's stories of the strange and bizarre.
Oh, I love that.
It's kind of like if you've ever seen Twilight Zone or Outer Limits, anything like that. It's kind of like that. It deals with anything from UFOs to Bigfoot to time travel to, just things like that. Just really strange things.
Yeah. And you know, now living in the Pacific Northwest, Sasquatch and Bigfoot are huge right now.
Yes. Like, oh, yes.
Huge. So maybe you'll come out with a series of that too. I'm just shocked.
Possibility.
How big it is. Because I've lived here my whole life. We always knew about Sasquatch, Mount St. Helens, you know, that was all our history. But now I'm like, Sasquatch books are everywhere.
Yeah. The the community building or the Chamber of Commerce here in town in Longview has got a 8-foot tall statue of Bigfoot in their lobby.
I know. And isn't it crazy?
I got my picture with it. So, you know, I'm a Bigfoot fan.
So anybody that's interested in Sasquatch, you got to come to Longview, Washington, our way, go to the city hall and take a picture of it yourself, because we're serious. We also have a very big addiction to squirrels, but we'll talk about that some other time. Because it's very interesting.
I'm from the South, and we first came up here, and they said Squirrel Fest. I mistook it as Squirrel Feast, and I'm oh, awesome.
Of course you would.
You know, but
I love it.
We can't eat squirrels here. You gotta love them.
They're on the endangered species list, I believe, these squirrels. The gray squirrels, and I have my love-hate relationship with them, but that's another story. But yeah, that's really funny. Okay, so it sounds like to me you're self-publishing. Am I accurate in that?
Yes, yes, very much so.
So talk us through the listeners and myself. So as you probably have heard in the past, if you listen to my podcast, you know this podcast is all about me. I'm learning about this whole journey myself. And so I'm always curious why you chose self-publishing as an author. Tell that to us.
Well, I started to go the traditional route of sending my work in to be published through publishing houses. Mm-hmm. And I sent in about 100 different publishing houses and to get published. I through all categories, you know, if they were picking up unknown authors, then I sent my work in. And I didn't realize until here recently that certain publishing houses only deal with certain genres. So I got a lot of rejection letters, if I got a letter at all.
Exactly.
And at the time we were living in Las Vegas, and a friend of mine said, hey, do you know one of the bus drivers is a published author? And he got his self-published through himself. He did self-publishing. So I started talking with him, and he was telling me about CreateSpace,
which
you can go to and self-publish, and it doesn't cost you anything. And it's an amazing, amazing website, createspace.com.
Yeah, I'll make sure it's in show notes.
you can you know, have your finished book and a cover, and you can download it to them, and they will format it up and get it set up for you, and then they'll publish it. And it doesn't cost you anything to do that. And that's how I did my first book.
Fantastic. So did you branch out? We'll talk a little bit more about marketing, but after that point, did you branch back out into Amazon and other places to sell, or are you just solely on CreateSpace right now?
Well, CreateSpace has links that can connect you to Amazon, because CreateSpace is part of Amazon. So you can find all my books on Amazon, CreateSpace, Barnes & Noble. Any place you can order a book, or you can go into a bookstore. We were in Astoria about a month ago, and there's a little bookshop there that's got a TARDIS from Doctor Who inside. We saw it from across the street, so we went straight in, and she's got all kinds of little books and everything. So I asked her, I said, well, do you have my book? And she's like, well, okay. So she pulled it up, and it's there. It's available.
Look at that. How exciting. Yeah. Astoria is just such the best little place to go to.
We found out. It was my first time there. And it was amazing.
It?
Yes.
Okay. Amazing. So afterwards, I'll have to tell you a couple of really good food places to eat there.
Oh, okay. Okay.
You go there to eat sometimes.
All right. But yeah, that's been my journey as far as getting published, self-publishing. And to me, it's a lot easier than trying to go the traditional route of finding a publishing house to do your publishing for you. And truth be told, I prefer this, because as my wife found out, you get to keep a lot more of the royalties for yourself. Instead of sharing them, you only get just a small percentage. You know, traditional publishing houses through CreateSpace and these others, you get a larger percentage.
Yeah. And that's kind of where I'm leaning towards. And that's why I'm asking every author. I do bring I have had other authors on here that are traditional published. And, you know, we go through the same conversations, I'm leaning towards self-publishing, and I've said it before because I come from an industry where I already know the gig for music. Yeah. Industry. So I'm like, I get it. I know what the story is. So, so speaking on that too, had you ever, and I ask all authors this, to get an agent or to not get an agent, is there a time in your future you see yourself getting an agent, or is it something you ever want to do?
Yeah, I believe in the future I want to get an agent. As of right now, I've not sold enough of my books to where it would warrant me to get an agent, because that's a percentage that comes off of my, of my profits to pay for the agent as well. But I mean, I do see myself within the next few years getting an agent, because as my wife said in her podcast, I see myself as a New York Times bestseller before long.
Awesome. And I'm all for it. I'm all for it. It'll happen for you. Believe it.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, I do. And I speak what I want, and I speak, a lot of stuff into being, and that's how you do, you have to have the faith in yourself to do what you need to do.
Absolutely. Awesome. And my belief is that this podcast will start reaching so many people that all my authors that are on here, you guys just see skyrocketing sales, and agents will come knocking down your door, because
that's the goal right there. Goal. Get our name out there.
Yeah, exactly. So marketing, something that is always hot on the discussion. I was telling your wife in her podcast, everybody's kind of heard this story as they listen to the podcast, so they're probably getting bored with it. But I am in the marketing aspect, has to be social media. And I'm good with a lot of social media. I'm still like, Twitter and I are not the BFFs yet. I'm getting there.
That's the same here.
Yeah. So tell us kind of some of your strategies that you use for the marketing part of it, or tips that you might have.
Well, the tips that I have is something I've always heard and learned. If you're going to go through a minefield, follow somebody who's done it, and CJ is really picking up on the advertising through the social media. She's on it every day, advertising, and I'm starting to slowly understand, hey, let's do that. Let's advertise a little more, because before I didn't. I let CreateSpace do that advertising where it was out all the booksellers and retailers, and so I'm like, well, okay, that's good enough. So now I'm starting to advertise a little more on, my Facebook, my the Twitter, and everywhere I can. So
exhausting though, isn't it?
Oh my goodness.
Another job altogether.
Yeah, because she's on me. She's like, you got to do it 2, 3, 4 times a day to do this, and I'm like, okay.
I know.
Yeah, because it takes away from my writing.
It really does. It does. And it's something that I'm looking into a lot of scheduling, tools to use to schedule. And that's kind of something, just coming from a background of IT, I tend to gravitate towards automation as much as possible. Saves my life. And so that's what I'm looking at right now. But the marketing is just,
it's hard.
But great tip. Find somebody that's already gone through that minefield and follow their path. Yeah. Great tip.
Yeah.
I'm looking for that person to guide me, my sage in this.
Well, I mean, CJ she's my guide on that. Yeah. She's on me constantly.
I love it. You guys are partners in crime. It's fantastic.
That's it.
So support groups. Have you been a part of writing groups or associations? And if so, which ones? And tell us about the value or no value of those for me.
I have tried to look into finding some. There's a few like the horror, because I write more of an adult horror. And it's kind of hard for me to find groups like that, because there's all kinds of groups for romance writers.
Oh yeah, romance is groups, big.
Science fiction writers, and there's a few groups for horror, but to join those, they want you to be an established author with sales. Okay. So as soon as my sales and my books get up to a certain level, then I can join a few of these other groups. But until then, I mean, I have favorite authors that I like to read and follow, and so I'm trying to get more of them as far as mentors to help me. So I've got feelers out for a lot of those.
Good.
Well, as far as groups, it's kind of hit and miss for me in my genre.
Well, listen, maybe through this podcast, there's a listener out there that is in a really great group for your genre in the area or close by, and they'll invite you. We never know.
Most definitely. I would love to.
So if you're a listener and that speaks to you, you get a hold of David, please let him know. So what inspires you? What keeps you going as an author?
What keeps me going as an author, like CJ said, this little bit of schizophrenia that we authors have. My characters, they wake me up at night. If I haven't written something about them, they're there. They're constantly there. Today, I met with a friend of mine to get a little bit of background information on one of the characters that I'm working on in my second book.
Oh, cool.
And my character basically slapped me in the face and said, hey, you've got three books on me. You've still got to do. So now I've got three more books on this new character. So, I mean, my motivation is there. It's constantly, beating me down saying, hey, what are you doing? You're not writing right now. You should be on the computer writing.
Mm-hmm.
So, and CJ, she's another motivation for me. She keeps me, she's like, have you written anything today? Have you done anything today? And I'm like, well, yeah, I've got some ideas. And she said, well, what are you doing?
I love that you have that built-in partner motivator. That's fantastic. Mm-hmm. So kudos to the both of you because you can help each other out. Okay. I have a lot of support in my family, but they're not writers. And so it's funny to me because almost every writer I talk to, we all discuss the people in our head. It's not a joke. So any of you listeners that are listening and think that we're crazy, it's not a joke. It's true. These characters, man, they got to come out. We got to write them. Otherwise we will go crazy.
My first book, The Gift of Blood, which is now part of my new book series, The Birthright of Blood. Those characters, there's three women that are, or four women that are the main vampire types. They came to me in a dream. And it was a weird dream about having to go to a bank. And that's where that book started from, a dream. And I dreamt.
Stories.
it's scary how sometimes the smallest things can create an idea for a story.
Yeah. Yeah, fantastic. Well, let's dig into your story. So I make our listeners go all through all these questions, and then we get to the place where you get to set up the stage for us. So set the stage for us, and I'll let you read your part of it, and then we'll come back, and I'll close us out at the end.
All right. The name of the book is The Birthright of Blood, and it is book one of the books of Shobael. Shobael is a 30-something-year-old guy who meets these four women, the four sisters, and they're vampires, and they change him. So he's actually comes from a long line. His father is actually someone in the story that we don't know about as of yet. But right now, he's got businesses in New York, and he deals with a lot of, he takes out gangsters and basically takes over their businesses. And we're at a point now to where he's about to meet one of the big bosses in New York City and have a little bit of a discussion with him. And he's got some guys with him to help him. And these guys are not just your normal kind of guys. Gray House is his best friend and more or less a brother that he has come in contact with, who is also the leader of a werewolf clan. So here we go into this. 10 minutes later, Shovael, Greyhouse, and four of his men left the Devereaux and headed toward the east side of town and to personally deliver a small gift to Charlie. Half an hour after leaving, the six men pulled up in front of Dom's place, the restaurant that Charlie the Taurus owns. Outside were three goons that allowed people in and out. These guys were big and tough-looking. The smallest was at least 6 feet 2 inches tall and probably weighed around 280 pounds. All three of them were dressed pretty much the same, black slacks and a shirt with a black jacket over, that more than likely hid a pistol underneath. As Shobael stepped out of the vehicle, one of the men approached quickly and said, "Excuse me. This is a private party here tonight, and you can't park here. You'll have to move on." Shobael, standing there looking at the man, said, "I thought maybe I would buy this place, then burn it to the ground, killing all the rats inside," as he gave a slight chuckle. The man, not seeing the humor in this, stepped up as he leaned closer to Chauvel's face and said in a sterner voice, "As I said, this is a private party and you need to move on now." Raising his hand and with two fingers, poked Chauvel in the chest. The other two goons stepped up beside him. Greyhouse stepped around the front of the vehicle just as Chauvel moved. He was so fast that the first man had no time to react as he was grabbed by the throat and hoisted into the air. There was a snapping sound as Chauvel twisted his hand and broke the man's neck. The other two were dead before their bodies hit the ground as Greyhouse tore their throats out. His eyes flashed as he held their throats in his hands. As soon as the bodies hit the ground, he dropped what was once their throats onto their jackets and smiled. As he stepped up beside Chauvel, his men climbed out of the vehicle and took up the bodies, carrying them into the alley. Once there, they took the bodies and dumped them into a garbage dumpster, not trying to cover the bodies up once they were inside. With this finished, they went inside the restaurant to deliver a gift to its owner. Greyhouse led the way as he opened the door into the broad vestibule-type entryway, just as a large man stepped up and tried to protest their entry. He was cut short with a broken neck as he slumped back down into his seat. One of Greyhouse's men closed and locked the door behind them and turned off the lights in the entry. He then followed the others in. The restaurant was a large Italian-style place with lots of nooks and places for couples to have quiet, candlelit dinners. The smell of garlic and pasta sauces were overwhelming as they passed through the front and went into the central dining area. There were lots of old Italian paintings on the walls depicting seaside villages as well as fishing boats along shores with beautiful villas. The tables had elegant tablecloths covering them with large wine bottles that were used to hold candles with wax drippings down their side. The center room was large enough to hold at least 100 people at all the tables, but tonight there were maybe 50 to 55 total, all sitting around enjoying some kind of celebration. Low talking was heard in the room as well as laughter. Chauvel stepped in as he said, "Good evening, everyone. I am looking for Charlie." As he said this, another big man came up to stop him from entering, but quickly grabbed and thrown to the ground by one of Greyhouse's men. All the noise stopped as soon as this happened. Smiling at the crowd, he continued, "As I said, I'm here looking for Charlie." Glancing around the room, an older man, maybe in his 60s, spoke up as he said, "I'm Charlie. Who are you and what do you want? Can't you see we're having a private little get-together here tonight?" Chauvel looked at the man, then smiled as he walked over to his table. As he approached, one of the men standing near Charlie stepped between the table and Chauvel. Charlie spoke as he said, "Let the gentleman approach." Another man, possibly in his 40s, who had been sitting across from Charlie, stood and moved around the table as Chauvel stopped at his chair. Pulling it out slowly, he finally sat down across from Charlie, never taking his eyes off the man. He placed a box he had been carrying in front of him on the table, then started, "Charlie, Charlie, Charlie, this is your lucky night. Or maybe not. I brought you a gift for your party." As he pushed the box toward Charlie, he continued, "We've not been properly introduced. I am Lord Chauvel Valseth." Nodding his head toward the stunned older man, Charlie was entirely taken by surprise by the youth of this man, maybe in his 30s. "You're Chauvel? What do you want here?" As he said this, three of his men stood as they went to circle Chauvel. Charlie raised his hand, saying, "No, sit down, boys. He's not here to cause trouble, are you?" More of a statement than a question as he looked straight at Chauvel. Still smiling at Charlie, Chauvel said, "Why don't you open your gift? Then we can talk." Charlie took the box and began to open it. Then as he moved the stuffing inside, the face of Joey Falcone suddenly appeared. It was staring up at him with eyes wide open. Charlie jumped up like he had been shot, and with a look of disgust and fear on his face, he shouted, "What the hell is this? Why is Joey's head in a box?" Some of Charlie's people tried to look into the box, but he closed it back quickly. He looked at Chauvel with fear all over his face as he said, "What is this? What do you want?" Chauvel leaned forward as he placed his hands on the table in front of himself, taking a deep breath as his smile vanished. "Charlie Vittorius, you dare send someone to my place of business, insult my family, try to kill them, and then to top things off, threaten me?" Charlie tried to speak in his defense, but was cut short by Chauvel's fist, hitting the table. He then suddenly stood, came around the table faster than anything Charlie or his men had ever seen before, standing beside Charlie in a heartbeat, no one having any time to react. Charlie had a small automatic .38 pistol he carried with him. It had ebony wooden handles that were polished to a high gloss with a nickel finish. He liked to call it his little enforcer. As he grabbed it and pulled it out to shoot this Chauvel in the face, his hand was stopped and bones crushed in a grip as strong as iron. He screamed out in pain as his hand was broken, still wrapped around the polished ebony handle. Charlie looked into the face of Chauvel as a plea tried to escape his lips as Chauvel whispered into his ears, "This will not be a good night for you or yours after all." At that moment, all of Charlie's men stood and drew their weapons, but it was too late. Chauvel was already on Charlie before any of them could have done anything. Charlie, in more pain than he had ever been in before, looked up into the eyes of this man that held his hand, broken and crushed, in a grip more powerful than a human should have. Witnessed something that would haunt him until his last breath on this planet. Chauvel's eyes changed from a regular green to a blood red that seemed to glow from within. His pupils changed as well. They went from round to a long, almost cat-like appearance. He was frozen in fear and pain as he saw this thing smile at him. Chauvel said in a voice more fitting an evil demon than a man, "Greyhouse, you and yours leave no one alive. I mean no one." Hearing this, Charlie's men had been standing at the ready with their weapons drawn, were stunned by what they saw next. In the same moment Chauvel spoke, Greyhouse and his men all did as before. They let their coats drop to the floor as hair grew from their bodies, muscles expanded as claws extended from their hands, which grew even larger. Faces changed as snouts formed, as well as fangs that got longer and sharper, dripping saliva and snarling, all this taking only seconds to happen. Charlie's men, taken entirely by surprise, stood, frozen with fear and disbelief, unable to do anything but stare at these things until they began to move, tearing at anyone that came close to killing everyone. Greyhouse and his brothers began to massacre all the people inside, tearing at chests, throats, with claws and fangs. Not one shot was fired. Some tried to run, but were cut down by clawed hands. Arms were ripped from bodies of big muscled men as though they were toys being torn apart by an angry child. Charlie, still in the grip of Chauvel, watched as these animals viciously killed his friends and family. His pain was causing him to slip into a shock as he tried to fight it. "Well, Charlie," Chauvel began, now almost a whisper in his ear, "I told you tonight wasn't going to be a good night for you." Charlie was looking at Chauvel as his teeth changed to fangs. His mouth opened wide as it came down on his neck. He felt sudden pain as sharp teeth went into his fleshy neck. He felt Chauvel's other hand pulled the hair on the back of his head, revealing his throat more as he felt another sharp pain in his throat. Charlie knew there was no winning this as his vision began to blur from the tears forming in his eyes. He could feel the room spinning as darkness began to seep into his world. Suddenly, though, he thought he could hear music over the screams of his family. As Chauvel finished the last of Charlie's blood, he raised his head up, licking the blood from his lips. He so enjoyed the thrill of a good kill. Not that he got to do it very often. Grabbing the top of Charlie's head as he pulled, there came a sickening, ripping sound, tearing his head from his body. Chauvel held it up as the lifeless body hit the floor with a thud. He took the head and placed it on Charlie's plate of food on the table, feeling a bit of victory over the room, over the scum. As he looked around at his brothers, the werewolves were finishing up. The last of Charlie's people were either dead or dying.
Awesome. Nice and gripping. I was enthralled the whole thing. So fantastic. Listeners, if you love that story, make sure you go to David's webpage off of the show notes, buy his book, continue reading it. And David, thanks so much for being here. We'll definitely get you and your wife back together. I hear you guys are going to someday work on a project together.
Yes, we've got a joint venture that we are planning, and we're kind of in the birth stage of this. So
we'll stay in touch and we'll have you back on. So thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to the podcast. We hoped you loved hearing from the author as much as we did. If you did enjoy the author, make sure you find them on social media, buy their book, and write a review. Are you a published author and would like to be featured on the podcast? Visit us at our website to learn more. You can help support the production of this podcast by following us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Share the podcast with your friends. And most importantly, become a supporter. Supporters receive monthly bonus podcasts and a newsletter filled with tips from our authors. To find out more how to become a supporter, visit our website. And finally, I hope you always remember to enjoy the journey. Until next week, this is Vicki J. Carter saying goodbye.